Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Today's show, I'd like to discuss the assaults going on by the Arab and Muslim populations of Europe against various European populations. Brief discussion of presidential primary, Texas Governor Abbott's call for a constitutional convention, and wrap up with the importance of how to show your children original documents, discuss them, and get critical thinking going in your family. My name's DR, as I mentioned. I'm Harvard and Stanford educated author, been regularly published over the last several years, and mostly in national security realm. So that's who I am. Today I see that RT is reporting that in Denmark, several more women were attacked over three different towns by recent immigrants living in refugee camps. It's quite shocking, not only the amount of attacks happening throughout Europe, especially in areas where new immigrants, not just refugees, have been settled, and how much the media and members of the various governments, in this case Denmark, Germany, Switzerland, and so forth, try and cover it up. Now, a lot of conservatives like to say that the reason that so many governments are supporting the flow of illegals, legal and amnesty-seeking immigrants is simply to expose their nations to a more socialist mindset, change culture, keep socialist governments in power. The only problem with that theory is that most of Europe went socialist years ago, and by bringing in millions of new immigrants, whether they be legal, illegal, or asylum seekers, it really doesn't change that. But what it does do is it destroys the Christian foundation of these nations. It cripples any chance for a Christian majority to take back over down the road. Now, part of this is our own fault. Christian birth rates in European countries and America have been falling for years, and it's not turning around. It's not a trend that we could change overnight if we could coalesce around the issue. So I won't go into details on what assaults have been taking place, as during this time of day, no doubt there's children around. But anyone who would like to research further, you're going to have to go to a foreign news source. I read RT. Any of the British papers are good to read on the subject. But it's really appalling because these assaults not only are happening daily, and not just to women. There's a lot of children involved. It's quite shocking. and yet it gets swept under the rug. And we need to bring out in the open that, one, the assaults are happening, two, that the various governments are trying to cover them up, and in quite a few cases, it appears that the police are actually hostile towards the women and children reporting these crimes. Not only is it shocking, it's unacceptable. A victim of a crime should never have to cower in fear because one's government or police will not defend them. I know Call Me Mom has discussed on many occasions just how evil Islam is, how sex slavery is practiced regularly, the abuses that go on. But I don't think it's seeped into the mainstream of American culture. Most Americans do not follow international news, and when they do, it very rarely gets down to crime data of various countries. So I would hope that we could have a frank discussion over the next couple of years about the threats of introducing all the asylum seekers into various nations is, and also the cost to our culture, to our families, and that it is an invasion. You cannot call it amnesty in simple terms. You cannot say it's just simply people looking for a better opportunity. It is an invasion. They are trying to change the culture of these Western Christian countries and the United States into a Shia Muslim following, and it is a danger that we cannot let go by. Now, this goes into discussion of the current political campaigns here in the United States. Currently, we have several Republicans and a couple Democrats vying for the presidential primary elections. On the Republican side, there appears to be one candidate in particular who gets all the headlines. I'm not a fan of his, would not vote for him, but the reason he gets the headlines he gets and the reason he has so many supporters is simply because he speaks about issues that Americans want to hear about and the other candidates won't. He also has some pretty bold, I guess you could call them ideas, I would say statements, some of them are good, that the other candidates wouldn't go near. I mean, how many candidates will actually discuss border security and you can believe them? There seems to be this perception by the Republican establishment that they can continue politics as normal. Well, the country's changed. Not only is our middle class deteriorating and disappearing, but our Christian values are under daily assault. Whoever thought we would live to see the day where Christians, priests, pastors could actually not only be criticized but be threatened with lawsuits and government action for discussing why they're against gay marriage, why they don't support socialism, why we should follow the Ten Commandments? Our republic's under constant attack, and for the most part, the Republican establishment is in on it or simply just does not want to change course, and that is dangerous. We have Governor Abbott, new governor of Texas, is calling for a constitutional convention. I think this is a terrifying idea. I like that he wants to do something. The problem with the Constitutional Convention is we have so few people who actually stay up on the news and who follow the events going on in their own state, let alone nationally. And what I think you would see is that the much more organized and militant left would take over any state convention and that we would see more of our rights stripped away. I mean, could you see states like Massachusetts, Illinois, Florida, California, New York, advocating for a more conservative federal government with more restrictions on federal power. I don't think we would ever see that in our lifetime. Also, our Constitution, while far from perfect, is one of the greatest documents ever drafted. And we can't follow it now. I don't see how a state convention to strengthen and change the Constitution would in any way be beneficial or affect the fact that we don't follow the Constitution now. Now, many of our founding fathers, even when they disagreed, I mean, there was a lot of disagreement as the Constitution was being drafted. You had men like Alexander Hamilton, who seemed to love almost every single government power you could give to the federal government. And then you had Thomas Jefferson and Madison arguing for a more limited federal government. But they could agree on a lot of the basic assumptions. They would not try to stifle religious speech. I mean, it just would not have happened back then. That was something the average person could agree upon. They could agree that states were to be powerful and that people had sovereignty in their state citizenship. We no longer could get even a large minority to say that we should have total religious freedom anymore. I mean, people may say it, but then when you start breaking down, well, should you be able to advocate against gay marriage? You'd lose a large percentage of the population on that. Advocate for the Ten Commandments. What if you were to advocate that divorce is not something that the government should be involved in, and that marriage should be only between God, the church, and a husband and wife? Those are not things we could get a majority of people agree on. What about the Second Amendment? We have a lot of conservatives who support the Second Amendment but have no problem restricting gun ownership on limited basis, and they'll say for a felon or for someone on a no-fly list or da-da-da. But the point is they do believe in some restrictions. Now, do you think you could get a majority in a state convention to say that our rights come from God, that they are natural rights, that no man has a right to take the right of defense from someone or to limit someone's speech? I mean, we see free speech zones spreading throughout the United States. It's a joke. It's a gross violation of our rights. But yet we continue to see it because most people will go along. A majority of Americans feel that the federal government is now supreme. And the federal government was never meant to be supreme. More power was supposed to lay with the individual, with his local government, than with his state and the federal government. We have things backwards nowadays, and I do not see a state convention ever being convened where you could get a majority to ever expand freedom. I just don't see it happening in our time. More than likely, if we're going to see freedom, it's going to have to happen at the state level. People are just going to have to support strong candidates and legislation in their states that simply says they will not follow unconstitutional government laws. That seems to be where the successes lay, and hopefully where the future of getting freedom back will be for us. I just don't see it happening at the federal level. But I don't think you should be discouraged to not work at the federal level. We should all be involved, do what we can, but that's not where we're going to see any restoration happen, in my opinion. I wanted to talk a little bit about educating your children in original documents. One of the struggles I've had is we have 11 children, one of who, unfortunately, miscarriage is waiting for us in heaven, but 10 of them on the earth with us, praise God. And my children attend public school. even though I'm a strong advocate for homeschooling. And going through my children's textbooks, especially recently, it was appalling to see that almost none of their history lessons contain original statements or documents. There's some professor or teacher's opinion on what the Founding Fathers believed or what the Founding Fathers said. And I was shocked to see how many overreaching court decisions were included in history textbooks, where the judges are interpreting what the Founding Fathers meant. But there's almost no original documentation, and it's so appalling because we are blessed with so many rich resources that have survived over the years. And so I would strongly like to encourage everyone listening that if you have children, if you have a child in your life, no matter their relation, please take the time to introduce them to the Founding Fathers, to their original documents. Get back to the letters they wrote. Get back to the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. A lot of the concerns the Anti-Federalists articulated about what would happen to the United States has come true. And it's amazing because if you read it, it's almost like they're clairvoyant. They just articulated beautifully how the federal government would expand. And it has. And for those of us who don't homeschool, I spend all summer teaching my children. I also spend weekends teaching my children. Yes, they attend public school, but I don't rely on the public school to teach them anything but how to get into a college and pass a exam. And we all have that time. I know time's precious, but we all have time where we could be sitting there and we could bring up a subject with our children and then discuss it and then ask them, you know what? What did Thomas Jefferson say about that? Could you find me one of his letters where he discussed that and write me a paragraph or two on it? And get them so that they're trained that they should go back, they should research, think for themselves, not rely on someone else's opinion of what a Founding Father thought. I have found, studying Thomas Jefferson over the years, and having been blessed to visit my cello many times and to see the archives and to go through them, that almost everything mainstream academia teaches us about Thomas Jefferson is either false or exaggerated or has a bias to it that's not reflected in his original writings. A lot of his letters are archived and can be viewed online. And it's really worth it to read through them, get the richness of thought and argument that he made. As you're going through and thinking to yourself, well, I don't know where to start. Pick a subject you're passionate about. Research what original documentation is there. Find a couple easy ones, because obviously English has changed over the years. And introduce your children to it. Children love the one-on-one time. And if you invest in them, we not only invest in our family's heritage, but we invest in saving the Republic, coming back to a Christian, godly nation that we used to be. My children, over the summer, read over 1,000 books from the local library, shocking the librarians. But it was easily accomplished, and that's with a family of 10 and the kids active in sports. So it can be done if we put the time out there. I continue to be amazed how few people know the Founding Fathers beyond Washington, even Jefferson to a lesser extent, James Madison. It's really enriching to get involved and to tackle those subjects. Not only does it expand our understanding of how the government should have worked, but also the value we should place on educating ourselves in multiple subjects. I hear quite often in our society now, don't be a jack of all trade, king of none. Yet, every one of the founding fathers and a lot of great men and women throughout history cross-trained and constantly educated themselves on subjects of the day, on new interesting scientific theory. They didn't say, well, my degree is in this area, so this is what I should study. You would find books on gardening, philosophy. I mean, it goes on and on, the subjects that were tackled by the generations of old. And we've become too tunnel visioned in our society now, where we want to focus on one or two areas and a lot of celebrity gossip. And we've let the excitement, the thrill of learning multiple subjects, trying to get a grasp on them, slip through our fingers. So I would really like to encourage you to take the time to read original documents, think critically for yourself on the subjects, and teach it to your children. One thing that amazes me every day is how few children on college campuses have ever had a political discussion with their family. Now, I grew up without a father and bounced between multiple homes, but I've always had a love for history, and part of that was my grandfather. So I was a little shocked, thanks to my grandfather and living in several various homes growing up. I was exposed to politics, and I've now been involved in politics for, well, it would have been about 20 years now. Everything from running a campaign headquarters to walking door to door. And when I started attending university, I was surprised how many not only never discussed it with their family, but their first introduction to political thought was the college campus. And it goes a long way to explaining how liberals are able to indoctrinate so many of our young. If they've never had it at home and they've never discussed it, and in some families, it's actively discouraged to discuss politics because it's considered rude or impolite, whatever. They're easy targets because they have this mind who wants to grasp, especially in your early 20s, how you can impact the world. And if their mind's empty and they've had no foundation and they don't know where their family stood, why their family had those beliefs, then they're easy to be taken over, they're easy to be indoctrinated, and they become militant because for the first time they have something they think they can fight for and be active in and change the world. And that is the easiest way for us to lose this cultural battle, is simply not to take the time to discuss it with our children and to educate them, and to support each other. Family and God is how we save our republic. They cannot destroy God unless they destroy the family first. And they cannot destroy the family if we teach our children to love God, to love the republic and the states they live in, and why it's important to do both. An educated child cannot easily be persuaded or indoctrinated because their family will have already built that strong foundation of knowledge. And once your eyes are open to knowledge, they can never be closed again. I think that all too often we take for granted that our children see us and that they know where we stand on issues. And that might be true. Might not. We can't risk that it isn't, though. We discuss with the kids, why are you voting a certain way on the ballot issue? why are you supporting certain candidates? Why do you attend the parish or church that you attend? Why do you have that belief? Don't just say, I'm Catholic. I've always went to Catholic church. My family's Catholic. Well, why is your family Catholic or Protestant or whatever religion? It's important that we actually hold those discussions, those deeper thoughts, and that we don't just go through the motion. Don't forget Karl Marx's famous quote, people without a heritage are easily persuaded. And that can extend to everything. Teach your children why you believe the religious beliefs you believe. Teach your children why their loyalty should be to their state before the federal government. And why our rights come from God. And those are natural rights that no man or woman can ever take from us. Because when something's given to us from God, no one's power supersedes the Lord's. And unfortunately, too few of us remember that. I think that these assaults that we're seeing in Europe, the attack on our Christian beliefs at home, the corruption of the two major political parties, they're all connected. It all comes to cultural deterioration. When you turn from the Lord, you leave yourself open to be persuaded by evil. And in too many cases, good people allow themselves to be used to promote the destruction of not only our culture, our heritage, our traditions, but to be pawns in a game that is being waged. There is a Satan, there is a Christ, and you're either on one side or the other. And so much of the news makes sense when you sit back and you realize there is intelligence directing the events of our world. And we cannot take for granted that that intelligence has been around a lot longer than us. And this has all happened before. I mean, the Muslim invasion of Europe went on for hundreds of years. Sex slavery, whites captured in Europe, taken back to the Middle East, the slaughter and persecution of Christians in Europe and the Middle East has all happened before. It's never stopped. Now the invasion of Europe has begun again. And we cannot afford to sit on the sidelines with our head in the sand and do nothing. We have to have the strength of character to call evil evil, to not back down, and to not accept it. I seen right before I came on the air today breaking news that the Obama administration is expanding the number of refugees admitted to the U.S. It's expected to be over 100,000 refugees a year starting 2017. It appears that a lot of the additional refugees will be coming in from Central America, which is a lot of communist and atheist people. Well, our time's up already. I apologize for Amos understanding my voice today. I had a root canal, and unfortunately, my voice isn't up to what used to be. Joe's still swollen. See you again next week, and I want to leave you with a quote from G.K. Chesterton. The way to love anything is to realize it might be lost. So be that tireless, irritated minority, and fight constantly for what you believe in. God bless.